This show contains language and themes that may be considered offensive to some. Please use your best judgment about whether or not you should be listening. As a kid, like a lot of people that I hung out with, which really wasn't a whole lot, it was mainly me, my cousins, and the guys down the street. I've always kept a very small circle of friends, you know. Anyway, we all liked Logan's Run, you know. Like probably a lot of kids around our age, we were attracted to it because here was this world where they were getting rid of all the old folks, you know. For those of you who don't know, basically, everybody who, if 29 was the oldest, but I'm pretty sure that everybody was dead by 30. It's been a long time since I've seen both the movie and the TV show, or the TV show, I should say. And I think what happened is that when you turn 30, you went to this place called Carousel, maybe. And then I guess like you went to like a higher plane or something, but basically what was happening is you were dying. That's how they got rid of the old folks. It's how they kept their society young, because they didn't have to worry about, you know, basically they didn't have to worry about healthcare. if you stop and think about it, because, only old people get sick, you know, young people stay young forever. We all know that. But, what happened in this story is that there were these people who, you know, when they decided, hey, you know, I'm 29, I want to live past 30, I don't want to go riding on Carousel. What they would do is they would run. And after they ran, there were, of course, people who were basically assigned to go and hunt them down. I can't remember what their names were. If they had like a certain type of name or something, like seekers or runners or whatever it was. I mean, I'm pretty sure that there's somebody who's listening to this who's just saying the name over and over again. Because I do that sometimes, like when I'm listening to Sci-Fi Dig or something. And I know the answer that he's having trouble thinking about. I'm just yelling at the yelling at my iPod, even though no matter how loud I yell, there's no way in hell that Aaron can actually hear me, you know, unless he's like hiding out my back seat, and that wouldn't be cool. That would just be very, very, very creepy. And the story of Logan's Run is one of these guys who is charged with catching these people who decide to run. And I believe they're looking for a place called Sanctuary, of course. Everybody's looking for Sanctuary. And what happens is that he turns 29, and he's almost 30, and he decides to go on the run. He takes some girl with him, and apparently they meet up with Farrah Fawcett. I can't remember the details. But anyway, his best friend is then assigned to hunt him down. All right, basically that's just it. The hunter becomes the hunted, and he has to, you know, outwit his former colleagues. It's a story that we've seen times and times again. I personally can't think of any other instances at this moment, but trust me, I'm pretty sure you can. Now, what it appears as though this is a story, like I said, about getting rid of old people, you know, keeping the society young. But really, and that's, you know, I admit that's what I believe that hype. But the more I'm thinking about it, and especially the farther I get away from 30, This is what, 12 years ago now? Wow, what a long 12 years it's been. You know, there's so many things have changed since I was 30. You know, the first 30 years, you know, I've heard people say this when I was younger, and I didn't believe it. I thought it was just old people trying to rationalize getting older. 30 really is just a prelogue, you know. That's the prelude to all the fun stuff. With the exception of the fact that, you know, I now have a little bit of arthritis and some high blood pressure. I'm having a lot more fun now than I did before I turned 30, you know, and I have more responsibilities and more of less of a safety net, I should say, you know, because when you're in your 30s, you know, unless they're like complete pieces of shit, your parents will be there if things get really, really bad, you know. Now, I'm the person that's to be there if my kids fall, you know, and that's a little bit scarier, but for the most part, life does begin at 30, you know, and I know there are people who are like 28 and 29 who aren't believing this, but you really do become smarter once you get past 30. So if you're a fucking dumbass now, you'll probably just be a dumbass after 30. Who knows, by the time you get to 40, you might be all right. But anyway, so I believed that, you know, that's what the story was about, you know, and I think that's what a lot of people think it's about, you know, keeping a society young and all that kind of stuff. Well, no, it is not. If you really stop and think about it, I'm just talking about the story. I'm not even going to talk about the very end of the movie, which if you've seen it, then you know that the oldest person in the world is not 31, you know. Anyway, if you think about it, that is not what the movie or the TV show are even about. It's not about keeping society young. What it's about is basically trying to break free of the notion that only the young can truly live. You know, because if you think about it, before he turned 30, before he went on the run, Logan was pretty much stuck in the same job all those years. He kept doing the same things over and over again. And it wasn't until he turned 30 that he realized there's a whole nother world out there. You know, I mean, think about that kind of symbolism. All right. Next time all you 29-year-olds are sitting there lamenting the fact that, you know, you're about to turn the big 30. There's no big 30. Come on now. Then you'll probably be able to see the movie a little bit differently once you turn 30. Okay, once you see that life, like I said, begins at 30. There's a whole lot of other things you can do. And to me, that's what this story ultimately turned out to be about, you know. We're talking about the 70s where Farrah Fawcett was one of the hottest women on the planet. Michael York didn't meet her until after he turned 30. So there you go. I mean, think about it that way, all right? When you turn 30, you meet really, really hot women, all right? No longer little girls. Anyway, one thing I just thought about, but 30, really? Huh. I guess it's a good novel for the, you know, it came out in the late 60s where there was a whole counterculture going on, and I guess if that's the way you want to look at it. I don't know if this was a book that was celebrating the fact that there was nobody over 30, which was like the whole, was it yippie thing? Not hippies, but yippies. Don't trust anybody over 30. Or is it kind of like counter-programming to that? Like, hey, look, life begins at 30, you stupid little kids running around with your toy guns. Can't remember. All I remember is that there was a robot in the TV show. And I don't remember there being like a cyborg, I should say. Rem, I believe his name was. I don't remember him being in the movie. I could be wrong. Because, like I said, I haven't seen the movie. You know, let me put it to like this. Last time I saw the movie, I remember thinking to myself, wow, this movie makes a lot of sense. I hate it. I'm going to hate it when I turn 30. You know, like that. In fact, I don't even think I was in my 20s when I saw that movie. I don't know. I might have been. Anyway, but that movie really got me to thinking about how that sort of ageism pretty much exists in a lot of sci-fi, you know, and in a lot of, you know, genre, comic books, all that kind of stuff, superhero stuff. A lot of parents just aren't there, you know. I mean, it's been talked about time and time again, about how, you know, parents are basically missing from the equation for most superheroes, most superhero origins, you know. Peter Parker's parents are dead. It wasn't until, I want to say, like, after he had been around for 20 or 30 years that they even mentioned that Hulk had an abusive father, you know. The Fantastic Four, you know, their parents didn't come into play until much, much, much later on in their whole mythology. Superman's parents, you know, his birth parents were, you know, they got blown the fuck up in a, on a planet. And then later on, you know, it's always part where his father ends up dying, you know, his adopted father, Pa Kent. Batman's whole origin revolves around the murder of his parents, you know what I'm saying? So there's always like this missing, you know, this missing element of parental guidance. You know, most of the parents guide from, you know, lessons from the dead. Peter Parker is another example. You know, his surrogate father, Uncle Ben, who raised him, died. And the one thing he told him, you know, if you believe the movie or you read the comic books, is, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And I think, you know, if you start a sentence with most people that goes, with great power comes, I'd have to say a good 80 to 90 people would say great responsibility, you know, whether they read comic books or not. I mean, that's just one of those things that everybody just knows, you know. There's also the American flag way of doing things, you know. You know, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know, what the hell else is it for? Anyway, so there's already this slant towards youth and the young in science fiction and in comic books, and, you know, fantasy. Think about how many sword and sorcery stories start with a young orphan who discovers a magic talisman of some sort, you know. And I guess that's why, you know, damn, I was going to try to work in a line about how you would think that 90210 was science fiction the way their parents kind of disappeared after a while, but it doesn't work. I was leading up to it, but, you know, not everything is golden. Anyway, where was I? Star Trek. Yes, that's where I was building up to. And you see, I have notes, you know, written mentally, because I'm driving to a doctor's appointment right now. It's one of the factors of getting old. You got to go to the doctor a lot more. anyway, the one thing that Star Trek. All right, that's where I was going with Star Trek. Now with Star Trek, the original one is the one that everybody looks to because it's been around what 60, 70 years now. And that's like the one everybody wants to take their cues from, you know. When they rebooted the whole Star Trek universe, they started with Kirk and Spock and those guys, you know, who, what, didn't they only last like 2 years into a 5-year mission or something like that? Whereas all the rest of the shows lasted much, much longer. I know that, Next Generation lasted 7 years. I believe Deep Space Nine lasted 5 or 6 years, and Voyager lasted 5 years, and even Enterprise lasted, I want to say, 3, maybe even 4 years. So the most, so the least successful television-wise is the one that, you know, is endearing to everybody's hearts except mine, I guess. And I figured out why it is. It's because if you look at the commander, the leader, I should say, of Star Trek, the original series, you have Captain Kirk. Spock was older. Bones was older, and yet they were answering to this this young whippersnapper guy, you know. And when the when the Next Generation started up, they introduced Picard and Riker, who had a totally different dynamic. Because even though Riker was the one who would go down on the planet and do all these, you know, crazy shoot 'em ups, we all knew that the buck didn't stop with him, that the man in charge was Picard. And I think that's why, you know, in the argument of who was your favorite captain, Picard or Kirk, to me it'll always be Picard, because Kirk just always seemed irresponsible, you know. I mean, no offense to Scotty, but you know, there were plenty of times where he would leave his ship, you know, the flagship of the whole fleet, you know, with the head mechanic in charge. You know, no offense to Scotty, but what the hell are you thinking? You know, at least you could have kept one of the bridge crew in charge, because they at least knew what the hell was going on. But Mr. Scott, come on, what are you doing? But when Picard left to go off on his Kirk-like adventures, he would leave somebody in charge who he knew could handle stuff. You know, who not only did he know could handle stuff, but we all knew that Riker could handle things. And to me, that made a lot more sense than if he had just like stopped, said, "All right, you know what, Mr. Riker, you're with me. Hey, somebody go down in the hold and go get Geordi and tell him to come up here and run things." You know, I mean, why the hell go to the bar and put Guinan in charge if that's the case. But that's one thing I was like. And I also like the fact, and more than probably anything else, I also like the fact that for once you had a guy in charge. Here was the hero of the story, and he was balding, bald to balding. I like that, because that shows, for one thing, it showed a different almost body type. I'm not saying that you have to have like fat people in science fiction, because let's face it, whenever you have a fat guy in science fiction, he's either a bad guy or he's a comedic sidekick. All right. But here was this guy who didn't look like the classic hero, you know, wavy hair, square jawed, right? In fact, the wavy haired, square jawed guy was, you know, the old man's bitch, and I liked that, you know. And here was something new, here was something different. When you went on to Deep Space Nine, first, you know, you had Hawk with hair, and that was just wrong, you know. And I'm so glad that they shaved Sisko's hair and gave him a goatee, so he went back to looking like a badass. All right, because let's face it, that first season when he had the hair and the clean face, he looked like a joke. And I just kept looking at him saying, "Come on, Hawk, where's the goatee? Get rid of that fuzz on top of your hair. Be a man. Be a bald man." When you get to Voyager, the oldest one on the crew, or appeared to be the oldest one on the crew, was the captain. You know, this was somebody, you know, you looked at Janeway and you knew, okay, she has some experience behind her. She has a certain gravitas that you just didn't give to Tattooed Face or any of the kids that were on the bridge, you know? And unlike a lot of people, I actually liked Voyager. I just wish they had done Voyager differently. You know, I like that whole concept. You know, I didn't mind them running into the Borg because it made sense that the Borg would be in this far off place, because the Borg were in a far off place when Q sent Picard there to run into him. And then once the Borg found out, hey, wait a minute, there's people over there, that's when they went in that direction. So I had no problem with them running into the Borg. It was like running everybody else with two legs, you know. And even with Enterprise, you know. With Enterprise, you had Dr. Sam Beckett in charge of everything. He not only did he look older, but we were familiar with him, right? I don't know about anybody else, but I had absolutely no idea who Patrick Stewart was until I saw the first episode of Next Generation. In fact, out of the Next Generation, the only one I had any kind of familiarity with was Kunta Kinte, LeVar Burton. Okay, I had no idea who any of these other actors were. He was the only one, and I just missed my turn. Oh shit! Oh well, I'll just go back around. With the next show, which Deep Space Nine, I knew. Like I said, I knew who Hawk was. I'm trying to think if I knew who any of the rest of them were. I think I also knew who the guy from Soap was, who was Odo, the shapeshifter. I'm trying to remember who else is on the show. There was the girl from that Rodney Dangerfield movie who kept being called Old Man. Ugh. And that's one thing that bugged me about that character, right? Here you have somebody with a lot of experience who they were calling Old Man, but it was a hot chick. Ah, come on with that crap. Anyway, with Voyager, I knew who Kate Mulgrew was because I actually watched Mrs. Columbo. And I think that was like the only one who I was really familiar with ahead of time. But with, but like, you know, as with most people, when I'm watching Enterprise, I knew exactly who Sam Beckett was. He was on Quantum Leap for years, you know. Then he was in this very underrated film called Master of Illusion, I believe that's what it was called, where he was a magician. And so, you know, not only was he older than most of the other crew, probably, I think, all of the other crew, but I was familiar with him. You know, the viewer was familiar, if not with this character, then with this actor. And, you know, that was pretty, I guess, comforting is the word I would use. You know, it was pretty comforting. We knew who this guy was. We knew pretty much what he was capable of. You know, even if we didn't know what the character was capable of, we knew what the actor was capable of. We knew basically his range and what to expect, and quite frankly, he didn't disappoint. You know, the show kind of disappointed because it just gave Trekkie fanboy something else to bitch and moan about. But hey, you know, they're part of fandom. One thing that I've always said about fans of anything, any kind of genre, whether it's not only genre, but if it's sports fans or politic fans, because there are people who just, you know, they dig on politics, comic books, movies, TV shows, music, they always, fans always need something to bitch about. Okay. If the writers had stuck completely to canon and what was known, was basically kind of retelling these whole stories, these old stories, to show that, you know, basically history always repeats itself and things are cyclical. Then people say, "Oh, this is unimaginative," you know. So when they try to do something different, they say, this would never happen. This is like too far away. It's like, oh God, you bunch of little crying, whining crybaby, shut up already. Anyway, as I was saying, so I really like the fact that they showed, Star Trek Next Generation. Not only did they show someone who was older in charge, and that had been done before in Battlestar Galactica, but not only was he older and in charge, but he wasn't like Lauren Green's Adama. Because I'm trying to remember, I don't ever recall Adama going like on a quote unquote away mission. You know, he basically just stood on the bridge and gave orders, which, you know, come on, he's Ben Cartwright. He does what the hell he wants to. And that made for some interesting storytelling, simply because I didn't want to see somebody that old shooting it out with the Cylons. You know, that's what the whole command structure was for. And I guess that's one reason why Kirk always bothered me, because not only did he just leave the ship in the hands of the mechanic, but on top of that, it was already known that they had security on the ship. So why didn't he have like some of the security guys go down? Oh yeah, I know why, because every time they did, they'd be wearing a red shirt and they end up getting killed. Anyway, yeah, so it's like, I can understand why most science fiction wants to put the emphasis on youth, on young people, because that's who they're basically trying to sell to. At least that's who they were back in the day, because it was always considered basically child's play. But then again, so were comic books. And as the demographic for comic books changed from young kids to middle-aged men, and now, you know, more than middle-aged men, shall we say, you see the level of storytelling changing, you know, because people are, like I said, they're always going to bitch and complain, you know, about how the stories are still so juvenile, right? You know, and they're male fantasy, and that's why women run around scantily clad. But if you really, really look at how the storytelling is now and compare it to some of the Golden Age stories, then you'll see that there is a drastic difference, okay? Not only in the artwork and the storytelling type, but how basically women are treated. People think that women are treated like shit now, right? And please remember that Wonder Woman used to lose her powers if she got tied up. All right? You know, I mean, come on now. Wonder Woman, who was as strong as Superman, was relegated to taking the meeting minutes for the Justice Society of America. You know, let's face it, the Atom was treated in higher regard than Wonder Woman, all right? And the Atom was basically a short guy who was on steroids, you know, with like a really stupid mask, you know? Yeah, one of the dumber masks, because, you know, I always think that, you know, I think Batman has a stupid mask too, because if you really think about it, if somebody just grabs his ears and just like yanks real hard, his mask is going to shift over to one side, right? But the Atom, it's the same thing. If you just grab his mask and you just like push it up like even half an inch, then he can't see. But oh well. Anyway, so I mean, for all of the complaining that people do about how women are treated now, just realize they were treated a lot worse back in the day, all right? And for everybody who thinks that minorities are treated bad now with a lot of racial stereotypes, remember, we didn't even exist back in the Golden Age, all right? I mean, we existed in, like, was it Jungle Comics or some shit like that? Not Jungle Girl Comics, but, like, Jungle Comics, or, you know, All Negro Comics or whatever it was called back then. I really should try to find out. At least try to find some of those books. Yeah, that'll go on my to-do list, you know. My to-do list is like very long. Now, this is not comic book noise. I've switched over comic book noise thinking for a second. Anyway, yeah, so the portrayals of women and minorities in comic books and in science fiction have drastically changed, right? And so has the place for people who are older, you know? The most recent Battlestar Galactica showed that, because whereas the other Adama was like always on the bridge, this Adama spent most of his time on the bridge, but when it came time for him to come off the bridge and kick some ass, he kicked some ass, you know? I like Edward James Olmos for that fact. I didn't really like him when he was in charge of Miami Vice, and I really didn't even recognize it as the same guy from Blade Runner until I actually saw Blade Runner again. Has there ever been a more overrated movie than Blade Runner? I mean, come on, jeez. I take that back, because I'm pretty sure that people like Blade Runner for what it is. But I'm reading Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And the story that they tell in Blade Runner is so drastically watered down compared to the universe that is in this book. But anyway, I digress. What was it? Oh, it was another one. Sequest. Sequest was another one of those things where you had a familiar older guy who was in charge of everything. But Sequest was also different because, if I recall correctly, their head of security, the guy who's most likely to like go into a fight with, you know, swinging both fists, was a big guy with a beard, you know. He really wasn't fat. He was just big, you know, and I kind of like that. Like I said, I like shows in general, but especially science fiction shows where there are characters who aren't like such stereotypical characters, you know. I haven't mentioned Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Trek. Star Wars. Excuse me. Some of you get your panties out of a bunch. But from Star Wars, simply because he's the wizened old warrior, you know. I mean, come on now. We've all seen. That's how most old guys are portrayed in science fiction, as somebody who knows just a little bit more than everybody else. Sort of overlooking the whole fact that Obi-Wan was some sort of pathological liar who just kept telling one lie after another to Luke Skywalker to turn him into a terrorist. Obi-Wan. And Qui-Gon, that guy, he's another one who bugged me. There's this, 70-minute video review of The Phantom Menace. If you like science fiction, if you are on YouTube, just go look for Phantom Menace review. This guy does like a 70-minute review. They're like 7 parts, 10 minutes each, because like 10 minutes is the most you're going to have on YouTube, where he dissects all the problems with the Phantom Menace. And he doesn't really spend a whole lot of time on Jar Jar Binks, because I think everybody knows that was like very ill-advised. But he does point out a lot of things that are wrong with the character of Qui-Gon. And these are some of the same concerns I had with that particular character. For this like wise Jedi Master, he just seemed like mess up time after time, you know. Anyway, yeah. So like, so most older characters are treated like they're like so wise, you know. Not unless you count like Third Rock from the Sun, where the oldest character was John Lithgow, who was a complete idiot. Or Mork and Mindy, where the oldest character was Jonathan Winters, who was a baby. But those are comedies, so I don't know. It's like Spaceballs, which I've seen. I thought I saw Spaceballs once. I thought it was a horrible movie way back when. And I know that's like sacrilege to a lot of sci-fi fans who actually think that that thing was funny, but I'm not one of them. I never will be one of them. Don't try to convince me otherwise. There was a Muppet show, Farscape, where the oldest character was a puppet, alien puppet. I don't know how wise he was. I only watched a couple of episodes of that, and there was something about that show that just bugged me. But they were all young and pretty. And I know that that's what sci-fi is all about. Young, pretty characters doing amazing things while the old folks look on knowingly, nodding their head, and some fat guy stepping in a pie, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, so if you haven't seen Logan's Run, check it out. There was also a TV show that starred Gregory Harrison and Heather Menzies and the robot Cyborg. I don't really remember too much about that one, other than it kind of followed the same plot of Logan's Run, but then it also turned into like The Fugitive, because most shows science fiction related turn into The Fugitive. Incredible Hulk was The Fugitive with the Hulk, and I'm gonna say Planet of the Apes was kind of like The Fugitive. I mean, everything just turned into The Fugitive, basically. So if you get a chance, see the movie. If you have an audio comment, send it in. Send it to Derek@deliberatenoise.com. That's D-E-R-E-K. Try to find that 70-minute Phantom Menace review. Trust me, even if you don't care about The Phantom Menace, this is hilarious. Very entertaining. Doesn't really seem like 70 minutes either. It really doesn't. Check out all the Star Wars, Star Trek shows. Even if you just watch all of them to see the changes between the first season and the second one, because I think like they all like had these very big changes from the first season to the second season that just happened. This is weird. It's like I said, just check it out. And that's it. And I will be back soon with another episode of Sci-Fi Noise. And because I forgot to put it in the beginning, Sci-Fi Noise is a part of the Deliberate Noise Network. Please go to deliberatenoise.com/sci-fi for the blog and links to all the episodes. Check out deliberatenoise.com with links to all the shows in the Deliberate Noise Network. You can send feedback to Deliberate Noise. Derek@deliberatenoise.com. Thanks. Bye. I'm going to go.